Have you ever had the experience before when you're really working at something and you're not getting it and you're not getting it, but then finally it clicks? Like a light bulb goes off and you all of a sudden get it and understand how to do it? You know, I had that experience a lot when I was in high school and working on math homework. Math just came hard to me. And it wasn't for a lack of effort. It was simply a lack of understanding the concepts of math. In fact, I remember once in geometry class, we were working on proofs. Do you remember those? Not fun. And I've never used them since. But I worked at them and worked at them, and I just wasn't getting it. And then one day it finally clicked. Oh, this is how you outline a proof. And it clicked to the point where I didn't get A's, but I could at least pass the classes, which is really all I was shooting for in that time. Or I can think of another experience. It was my first week in college, and I had some people knock on my door and say, hey, would you like to join our ultimate frisbee team? And I said, I don't know, what's that? I've never played that before. And they said, well, you seem athletic. I'm sure you'll do great. Why don't you just join? And I said, yeah, that sounds great. And I was athletic. I could run really hard, but I didn't know how to throw a frisbee at all. In fact, we've got a picture of me playing, which was hilarious because you can see the intensities there. I wanted to be good. The effort was there, but the skill just never came, never came. And I was actually cut from the intramural team. It was a no-cut sport. But I was that bad where they just didn't invite me back that next semester. But I wanted to get better, and so I practiced the next semester, and I worked at it and worked at it, and then one day it clicked. I was like, oh, this is how you throw a frisbee, and then I played the rest of my time in college. I'm sure we've all had those experiences. Whether you're trying to learn a new hobby, maybe learning the piano, or taking on a new sport, or maybe you're starting a new job, and you have to work at things for a while until finally in your head you go, oh, okay, I think I get it now. I think this all makes sense. Well, thinking about this made me realize that that's somehow or sometimes the way faith can be as well. You know, there's times in your faith development where there's like an aha moment, where you go, oh, this is what it means to be a Christian. Oh, this is what it means to have God in my life. There are times when all of a sudden faith and understanding God's love for you clicks in some way and makes sense on a bit of a deeper level. You know, I bet for many of you, you grew up going to church, and your parents probably dragged you there each and every Sunday and said, you're coming to church because we want you to come to church. But there was some day in there where it became your choice. And you said, no, I want to go to church. I want to be there. I want to come and experience God's presence. Sometime in our faith development, faith becomes real for us. In some level, faith kind of clicks. I'm wondering for you, do you remember what that moment or maybe series of moments was when faith made a little bit more sense, when that kind of clicked on a personal level how much God loved you? It's truly an amazing feeling. I mean, that's the sort of feeling that can set the trajectory of your life on a completely different course when that really starts making sense. So if you have that image in your head or that time of life when that was for you, well, then here is what I want us to do this morning. Here is the question I want us to consider. How can we, as a church, create an environment where faith can click for those who have never had that experience before? Because think of it, if you have had, and I know not everyone in this room probably can say, yeah, that was the moment for me, but if you have had that experience, and if it has changed your life, then you want that for other people. And so how can we, as a church community, help create the environment where that can happen more for people who walk through these doors? Now, quick disclaimer here. And the disclaimer is that faith is not actually something we can create on our own. That's something God does. And yet, I believe God does use the church, uses the church as a tool to hopefully create that opportunity, that environment for people to understand on a deeper level who God is for them, for faith to click. And so, in order to understand this question and to explore this question some today, we are going to study a story in the book of Acts that talks about this very same thing. Okay, so to give you a lay of the land, if you've read the book of Acts before, you know it comes after the Gospels. You know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, that's all of Jesus' teaching. It talks about Jesus' death and resurrection and him ascending into heaven. So the book of Acts comes after that. And in the book of Acts, it's all the early Christians saying, okay, what do we do now? Now that we know God's story, and now that God has come into this world, what do we do in response? And the book of Acts follows that story of them spreading out into that surrounding region and going and sharing about what Jesus did and then creating little churches in their communities. And the exciting part about this is that they're being successful. People are turning to God who have never turned to God before. People are hearing that message that, hey, Jesus came into the world and this is what it means for you, and it's being actually effective and successful. But with all of that successful outreach, a problem emerges. And that's the problem we see in Acts chapter 15, verse 1, when it says this: then certain individuals came down from Judea and were teaching the brothers, unless you are circumcised according to the custom of Moses, you cannot be saved. Okay, let's make it really clear that this is not the problem that we're dealing with today. In fact, I don't know any church that is dealing with this particular issue today, and that happens from time to time when you read the Bible. Well, you'll read where they are really immersed in solving a particular problem, and you say, well, that's not really my problem. That's something that maybe was really important 2,000 years ago, but it's not as important to me today. But the beauty of the Bible is that even if the particular issue or problem is not one that you relate to, where you can still study the process they used in solving that problem. And that's what I want us to do today. I want us to see, how did the early church tackle this problem? What was the process they used to come to some conclusion? Because I think we can do that still 2,000 years later. And so the problem that we see emerging in Acts chapter 15 is that a group was teaching that you cannot be saved unless you're following the laws of Moses. Now, to us, 2,000 years later, that's probably a bit of a shocking statement. And yet, if you think of this time period, that's really not that unusual. I mean, this was how they understood faith from the time of Moses. This was their history. These were their laws. These were their customs. This is what you did if you were going to be a faithful person. You followed the laws of Moses. Now, that began to change a little bit with Jesus, right? Where Jesus came in and said, no, salvation is open to the whole world. You don't have to be an ancestor of Moses. It's open to everyone. But you had this group of people who said, okay, that can be true. Salvation's open to everyone, but you still have to follow these traditional laws and customs, the laws of Moses. And so that's the issue that's being dealt with in Acts chapter 15. You have then two missionaries, Paul and Barnabas, and they were two of these Christians who were going out everywhere and sharing the good news about Jesus. Well, they hear of this other group, and they are not too pleased with this teaching. And so we see in the next verse what their response is. We're told, and after Paul and Barnabas had no small dissension and debate with them, Paul and Barnabas and some of the others were appointed to go to Jerusalem to discuss this question with the apostles and the elders. Okay, so the big question that they're all discussing is, what do we do with these outsiders who are turning to God? You've got all these people who don't have our history, our Jewish history, the laws and customs of Moses, but they're turning to God. So what do we do with this group of people? And so in this time period, 2,000 years ago, they said, let's get everybody together. Let's get all the churches together. Let's get all the apostles and the elders, and we'll have a big council meeting in Jerusalem, in the capital city, and we'll talk about it. And we'll figure out what you do with all these outsiders who are turning to God. And so Paul and Barnabas stop their missionary journey, or at least pause it, go and travel to Jerusalem to take part in this large discussion. We're told in verse 4 what happens when they arrive. It says, when they came to Jerusalem, they were welcomed by the church and the apostles and the elders, and they reported all that God had done with them. But some believers who belonged to the sect of the Pharisees stood up and said, "It is necessary for them to be circumcised and ordered to keep the law of Moses." And the apostles and the elders met together to consider this matter. Now, after there had been much debate, Peter stood up and said to them, okay, pause right there. So, they're having much debate. They're like good Presbyterians, they're talking about the issues and saying, well, what do you think? What do you think? And everyone's getting up and kind of having their say of their solution of what you do with these outsiders who are turning to God. And then Peter stands up. And now Peter, remember, he was one of the original 12 disciples. I mean, if you're here last week, Peter was the one we studied who walked on water towards Jesus. And so you can bet when Peter stood up to speak, all the eyes in the room kind of turned towards him. Say, well, I wonder what Peter is going to say about this. And Peter takes this opportunity to have a little bit of a speech, to say, this is what I think we should do, the solution to this problem. And so let's study now for a second what Peter said. We're told in the next verse, "My brothers, you know that in the early days God made a choice among you, that I should be the one through whom the Gentiles, i.e. the non-Jewish people, the outsiders, would hear the message of the good news and become believers. And God, who knows the human heart, testified to them by giving them the Holy Spirit, just as he did to us. And in cleansing their hearts by faith, he has made no distinction between them and us." Okay, so Peter's going to have two main points in this speech. And we come to the first one here, and we'll get on the screen for you. But this is his first main point. God offers faith to everyone without distinction. Now, that's different from what this other group was saying, isn't it? And the other group was saying, no, 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 salvation comes when you're following our traditional laws and customs, the laws of Moses. But Peter stands up with all those people in the council room and says, no, 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 the only thing that makes you acceptable to God is faith in God. That's it. That is the only criteria. You can attach nothing else to that but faith in God. And in that way, he was opening up the doors to the church wide open. So that's his first point that he wants to make to all of these people who are sitting there, is that when God sees us as humans, he sees no distinctions like we see distinctions. He sees no separations like we might separate ourselves. No, when God sees us, he just sees faith. That's Peter's first point, and he's not done. The second point in verse 10, he says, "Now therefore," if that's true, if God only sees our faith, "now therefore, why are you putting God to the test by placing on the neck of these disciples a yoke that neither our ancestors nor we have been able to bear? On the contrary, we believe that we will be saved through the grace of the Lord Jesus, just as they will." Okay, so Peter's second point, and I'm paraphrasing here, but we'll get this on the screen as well. Don't hold the outsiders to a standard that the insiders have not even been able to keep. You see, he's referring to the law of Moses, which at this time period had 613 commandments. And we think keeping 10 commandments can be a challenge. Can you imagine? 613 commandments, and they range from a variety of things, like how to keep the Sabbath, how not to work, different sorts of dietary things, how to cook. There was a whole lot of ways to regulate your life. And Peter is standing up with all these people who have done that the majority of their lives and says, listen, brothers and sisters, we have not been able to keep this standard. We haven't been able to keep all of these commandments, and so why would we put the yoke of that burden on people who are just now turning to faith? If we ourselves have not been able to be faithful to that, why would we put that burden on someone else who's new to faith and now just turning to God? Well, we're going to now skip ahead a little bit, although I encourage you, go home and read all of Acts 15. It is a great, insightful chapter. But we're going to skip ahead to their conclusion. You know, a couple other people stand up, give their thoughts, and then James stands up. Now, this is James, the brother of Jesus, who has an interesting story because he didn't actually believe Jesus was who he says he was when Jesus was alive. But something changed for him after Jesus' resurrection, and now we see in the book of Acts that he's one of the most well-respected early church leaders. And so when they need someone to make a decision, James stands up and says, I'm going to render a decision. This is how I think we should treat the outsiders who are turning to faith. This is what James says. Therefore, I have reached the decision that we should not trouble these Gentiles who are turning to God. That is really the main point of this passage. This is the main point of Acts chapter 15. And because of that, I want us to really get this. And so we're going to explore this in a couple of other translations as well. This is the NRSV. Here it is in the NLT, their translation. And so my judgment is that we should not make it difficult for the Gentiles who are turning to God. Here's the Message version. So here's my decision. We're not going to unnecessarily burden non-Jewish people who turn to the Master. So basically, what the council is saying and what their big decision is this: do not make it difficult for people who are turning to God. The early church, 2,000 years ago, decided that they wanted to remove any possible stumbling block that would be in a person's way from turning to God. That's a courageous decision. That's a bold decision for the early church to make. I mean, that would not have been the easiest decision to make. No, the easy decision would be for James to stand up and said, okay, if someone is turning to God, they need to do what we've always done and act like we're currently acting, following our laws and customs. That would have been the easy thing to do, but James didn't do that. No, he said we need to remove every stumbling block, even if it's our own heritage, for people who are turning to God. So, here is my attempt to bring that wisdom into our current context today. Because remember, even if we're reading something in the Bible and we say the problem's not exactly what we're dealing with, we can still look at their approach, their conclusions, and apply that to what we are dealing with today. So here is the wisdom of Acts 15 for Unity Presbyterian, and we'll get this on the screen as well. The story encourages us to make it as easy as possible for those outside of our community to turn to God. That's our job. Think of how do we make it easier for people who are not here right now, not in our community, to turn to God, to have that moment where faith clicks for them. What is in our power to go and do that for other people? How do we do that? I'm sure we all have our own ideas. I'm sure we can all think of different stumbling blocks that might be in people's paths, but how do we as a church community do that and replicate Acts 15? Well, I'll share one idea that I had with you. And one idea that I have is to think that if faith has already clicked for you, if you already understand the power of God's love in your life, then your focus now shifts. It shifts not from thinking about what you enjoy or feeds you, but your focus shifts on thinking, how can we help other people turn to God? How can we help overcome stumbling blocks that might keep people out of our community? How can we help make it easier to turn to God? Now that, if we really embrace that, would change the decisions we make as individuals and as a church, because it wouldn't be focused as inward. It wouldn't be saying, well, what do I like? But it would be saying, well, what's needed for those outside of our community who are not here in our presence yet? What can we do to make it as easy as possible to come into this midst and experience the presence of God? This is very powerful when it happens. You know this if faith has clicked in your life, but you know this as well if you've had friends or family members where you've seen God take a grip in their life. It changes people. I'll give you an example of when I saw this happen. There was a young woman named Donna, and as a senior in high school, she decided to give her testimony of the time in her life where faith finally became real. You see, she came to this country at the age of 3 from Haiti, right after the earthquake. And so she and her family came, and she had none of her family knew any English at that time. But she didn't realize she was different until she was followed home from school in grade school and beat up simply because she was Haitian. Then she started to realize, oh, people might view me differently here. She realized even further that she was different in middle school when she realized she had 9 siblings living in a 3-bedroom apartment in a really kind of bad section of Tampa. Well, she woke up one day and said, oh, I don't think everybody lives like this. And she saw that in her area, there were gunshots, there was violence, and she realized in that moment, not everybody lives like this. And she, as a middle schooler, was gripped by the same emotion that would probably grip us in her place, anger. She was angry at her circumstances. And so she started acting out in school. She started acting out in home, and she became angry at God, saying, God, if you are allowing me to live in this situation, in these circumstances, then I'm angry with you, and I want nothing to do with you. But you know what changed in her life? A church got involved. Slowly, a church got involved and started inviting her and all of her brothers and sisters to church. They would send a bus to pick them all up. And so she started coming to church, not because she wanted to be in church, but because they had free food. And she thought, that sounds pretty good. And so she started coming to church. And then, since she was in middle school, the church said, you know, why don't you come to some of our middle school camps? And she'd never done that before. And so she started coming to the middle school camps, and then she became a high schooler. And in high school, they said, well, why don't you come with us on these mission trips? And so she kind of started coming on the mission trips, started getting involved in their community, and she realized that this church really, really loved her. And then, in her words, this is the conclusion she came to. She said, I realized that I had been shown the love of God by how this church acted towards me. And I didn't even realize that God actually had that same love for me that this church was showing. She said, when I realized that, faith clicked. Faith became real for me. The love of God that was shown through the church became real for me. And suddenly, she never looked back. When faith finally clicks in someone's life, it is a powerful, powerful moment. And we should do everything in our means to help that moment become easier. Because the truth is, every Sunday has a possibility that faith could click for the first time in someone's life. I mean, every Sunday has the potential for God's saving love and grace to finally penetrate a person's heart for the very first time. I mean, every weekend someone could walk through our door saying, I'm going to give God one last chance. And we've got the opportunity to create in a community where they can easily walk in here and experience God's presence. And so, I'd like to give you some next steps, because I think sermons are not very helpful if you forget them the moment you walk out that door. And so instead, if we engage with the scripture, if we really wrestle with what's in the Bible, we should have some sort of take-home homework that we can go and some call to action in that way. And so here is the call to action for you today. You know this church and this community of Denver so much better than I do. I'm just walking in here really maybe a couple months old. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to learn from you so that we together can discover the ways where we can make it easier for people to turn to God. And so here's how I want to do this. Next Sunday, May 6th, not only is it Youth Sunday, it's going to be amazing, but after worship, we're going to have an usher training. And that's really important because ushers are often that first person that can welcome people into the church, those visitors. I'd like to expand usher training to anyone in this room who wants to have a conversation about how to make it easier for people outside of our community to turn to God. I want you to just bring your ideas. Bring your ideas and come discuss them as a church and say, what can we do to help make this real in the Denver area? And to help you with that, there's three questions that are in your bulletin that I'd like you to think about this week. You got them on the screen as well. The first question is just a reflection question. What was the moment for you when faith kind of clicked? Internalize that a little bit. And then think number two, what are some potentially stumbling blocks that you see that hinder people from turning to God? What might those be? And then probably the most important question, question number three, what can we as a church do about it? Because together, let us discover how to make it as easy as possible for people outside of our community to turn to God. Amen.